Engineering.
James Field is a biologist and the chief executive of Lab Genius. It's a startup based in a former biscuit factory in East London, and it's trying to develop new drugs based on proteins by overcoming the shortcomings of the human brain.
Biology is really complex, and typically as humans, when we try and understand something, we have to abstract that idea into language and abstract it into a simple enough form that we can communicate linguistically. And when you try and do that about a system that is incredibly complex, you often lose a lot of the nuance that enables you to accurately represent it. In addition, actually, when you're trying to do the protein engineering process yourself, you're there in a lab as a highly trained scientist, often doing a lot of very monotonous pipetting. So both on the cognition side and the experimental execution side, we as humans are definitely not ideal for conducting those sorts of scientific experiments.
James and his team are using AI to run, evaluate, and adapt experiments. He took me on a tour of his laboratory.
This is the team.
Hey.
Stefan and Kelly, who I think you met. Pedro, do you want us in lab coats?
In here, yes, please.
Yeah, okay, so we're gonna coat up. Ken, you've got these are the goggles you have to be wearing. Those are legendary in the company.
It turns out that you need to wear lab coat and safety goggles if you're going to go into a laboratory. Some things will never change. So why are we talking about Lab Genius? After all, this is meant to be a show about the scientific method. Here is the link. AI techniques like machine learning and what's called generative or evolutionary algorithms work by spotting patterns in massive data sets, and they improve their performance based on feedback, basically the results of previous analyses. It's what powers how you find your next box set, how Alexa understands you,
hello,
how you meet your plethora of Tinder dates. All that absolutely marvelous stuff. What James and a few other companies and researchers are doing is applying these techniques in a novel way. And this could have a big implication for science.
We'll have a computer generate hypotheses over what specific genetic designs could work well and which may not work so well. So for example, when we're trying to create a new protein, we think of it really as a solution space that we're exploring. And this solution space is effectively infinite. And you can computationally predict, based on the knowledge that you have that you've generated empirically, which potential designs, if you were to test them in the real world, may be high performers and which may be low performers. And that enables you to actually rationalize the number of molecules that you actually will test physically in the real world.
James's team uses an algorithm that can develop hypotheses with almost no prior knowledge of a topic, which might otherwise bias what it factors in. AI helps run the experiment, it evaluates the results, and then it uses those findings as an input to automatically generate new hypotheses and perform new experiments. In this way, it evolves, and it may eventually achieve a desired result. Say, identify a new drug or create a new material with certain properties.
So we'll go from this effectively infinite design space to, say, 10 trillion unique protein designs that we want to test here in the real world. And then we'll physically manufacture DNA sequences, so a mixed pool of trillions of unique DNA sequences that are made synthetically, each of which encodes a unique genetic design. Those DNA sequences are then used to create the proteins that they encode, and then we test physically here in the real world trillions of those different protein designs. We then use next generation sequencing to interrogate which of those genetic designs were high performers and which were low performers, and then we use machine learning to really understand the relationship between sequence and fitness.
How long does it take to do that?
That whole process currently takes about 27 days.
Holy you're running trillions of experiments in 27 days.
That's right, and you're doing it recursively. So every time you test a new trillion different things, those new trillion designs will be better.
This really is a holy smokes moment for science. Let's stop and think about this for a second. What this means is that all that can be known will not be dependent on being conjured up by the human mind. Now, an algorithmic silicon system may uncover something new, and it will have done that in effect by trial and error at a vast silicon scale. This is hypothesis-free science, or radical empiricism, seeing what works, basically without theory per se, and the vast scale with which it operates matters. After all, a saying in science is, more is different. If a zillion monkeys bashed on a keyboard, eventually one will write a Shakespearean sonnet by chance. Likewise, This technique, sometimes called empirical computing, is the scientific equivalent of that. If we increase the scale of our experiments billions-fold, we may eventually identify the right answer to an elusive question like, what combination of chemical compounds cures a disease?
You could think about this whole protein engineering problem as a search problem. Say that there is a disease that you want to cure, and you're confident that a protein drug could be made to cure it, but you just don't know the sequence of that protein. That protein sequence exists in this theoretical space that we call sequence space. And if you knew that sequence today, then you could be synthesizing that drug, that pharmaceutical product, in your lab within a week. Now, the challenge is, because that sequence space is infinite, actually finding that molecule is a very difficult challenge. Whenever we think about evolving a new protein, we think about how do you rationalize that search through sequence space. The way that we do that is by really combining brute force, the brute force of biology, the ability to test trillions of things in parallel, with the intelligence of computational, being able to take a lot of data, the data for trillions of different experiments, and really crunch it to get new insight that enables us to rationalize that search through sequence space.
But James isn't alone searching through this space. Over the past 2 years, I've met other researchers who are pioneering this technique. There's Recursion Pharmaceutical in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Maybe a single pathologist can go look at 10 cells an hour, and within each cell, look at 4 or 5 different things. But a computer vision algorithm can go look at 10 million cells in an hour, right? And for each of those 10 million cells, it can go look at 20,000 features. And when you have that sort of scale, both in breadth and depth, I think you start to see really interesting things. And that's, of course, what's happening.
And there's Zymergen in California.
But what if we could approach genetic engineering the way Google does search? Not relying on hypotheses, but on algorithms that systematically search the full space.
There is no set term to describe what's happening. It is atheoretical by ignoring or at least minimizing prior knowledge. It is hyper-empirical trial and error. Because it does not rely on theory and you just throw anything and everything at a problem to see what works, you might call it kitchen sink science. But is this changing how science is actually done? To answer this question, I spoke to deep thinkers in the area whose day jobs are to finance the technology.
Zavadar, I'm a partner at Lux Capital, early stage deep tech fund split between New York and Menlo Park, teach and lecture at Stanford, background in computer science, machine learning, AI, all of the buzzy stuff that we read about today.
Science has so far needed a human mind to conjure up an idea, but humans are biased to think in certain ways and see certain things. An algorithm is not. And that may change how science is actually done.
If you think about the scientific method, we assume that there are underlying ground truths. And we as scientists or discoverers or practitioners of whatever field we're in, we're looking for those patterns. We're looking for those algorithms that are at once true but generalizable across the entire kind of domain that you're working in. Perhaps we can move away from this actual hit-driven scientific method, at least in complex dynamical systems, where there may in fact be a ground truth, but we're oftentimes we're limited by our own understanding, our own kind of limitations of humans. And so we're able to use a similar sort of machine learning or empirical approach to solving these problems, even though there may actually be ground truths.
What humans are able to know becomes a paramount question. The world is a complex place, and we are limited in our senses and our synapses. But we now have a technology that can exceed people's ability to comprehend the world and act upon it.
Arguably, there are realities in the world. There are systems that are complex enough that no individual human or no group of humans can actually grok them. Right. I think AlphaGo last year from DeepMind was a great example. You taught this computer a game that, you know, we've all played probably countless times. The world's experts looked at the computer and weren't able to understand what it was doing. Right. The computer found a unique pattern that we may not understand. It may, like, the complexity of what that computer saw may be beyond, like, what is almost epistemologically possible for an individual to grok or understand or comprehend.
Coming up, does this really spell the end of the scientific method as we know it?
There is a strong idea that AI can even take over the scientific methods, that we can have a complete automation.